PT Final Exam is an awesome resource for students preparing to take the National Physical Therapy Exam. Visit them online at ptfinalexam.com/pintcast. That's ptfinalexam.com/pintcast.
This is the PT Pintcast, a podcast that talks about physical therapy over beer. Bringing together clinicians, researchers, and forward-thinking PTs in a show that's anything but boring.
Let there be beer!
This is the PT Pintcast with your host, Jimmy McKay.
Tonight on the show, she's an OCS PT who works full-time as an injury analyst and a senior writer for ESPN, formerly served as an injury analyst for KFFL, RotoWire, and XM Radio. Hired in 2007, actively blogs on the NFL League Injury Analysis for ESPN, where she is a regular columnist. She regularly compliments on-air journalists with analysis of breaking news. She serves as a co-host of a fantasy-focused podcast on iTunes with Matthew Berry and Field Yates, where they break down injuries to watch out for your fantasy team. Can you say dream job? After earning her undergraduate degree from Princeton University, the Tigers, where she studied French literature, she went on to receive her Master of Science degree in physical therapy from the U, University of Miami Hurricanes, followed by a certification in orthopedic manual therapy from the Ola Grimsby Institute. They don't have a mascot, I checked. Prior to joining ESPN, she worked for Kaiser Permanente and taught at the Kaiser Hayward Physical Therapy Fellowship in advanced orthopedic manual therapy. She's held teaching positions in the PT department at Samuel Merritt College and the University of Kansas Jayhawks. Her patient population primarily includes complex orthopedic cases involving athletes and performing artists. She has held elected positions at the American Academy of Orthopedic Manual PTs. She is the recipient of the University of Miami Alumni Fellowship Award and the AAMT John Monnell Service Award. And finally, and most importantly maybe, a graduate of Madeira High School in McLean, Virginia, home of the snails. Can I get a go-go escargots? ESPN's injury analyst, PT, and California girl at heart, ladies and gentlemen, on the PT Pinecast tonight, Stefania Bell.
Wow.
Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. A lot of history there.
You've got a lot of stuff going on. We're going to get into some stuff tonight because you've just got a cool story. You told your story at the National Student Conclave in Omaha. I was on a flight to Omaha when you were on stage, so I totally missed it. That was my first National Student Conclave, and I missed it. So I want to get into that. So first question is always the hardest. What are we drinking tonight?
Oh, it's not hard. I'm drinking Corona Light. That's my go-to in the summer when I'm trying to watch the calories. But my preference would be an Anchor Steam. The San Francisco folk can appreciate that's my go-to.
Yeah, that's a good. I've had both of those beers, and I agree with you on the Corona Light is just a very summery tasting beer. Having a different beer with each episode, I am going with Dewclaw Brewing Company. That's out of Baltimore, Maryland. The Bare Ass Blonde Ale. I'm gonna let you know how that is. Yeah. So, well, cheers. Thanks for taking some time out and talking with us. You are a very, very busy woman. Just moments before we were set to record, you're getting phone calls, and we don't have to say which team are involved because this is inside information, but you're getting phone calls and texts and tweets from people I'm imagining at all times about a bunch of different situations. Tell me about that.
It is a round-the-clock job, although I have to say right now, being the summer, it's a lot easier than the fall. In the fall, it's 7 days a week, potentially 24 hours, because people are in different time zones. You take the calls whenever they come, the texts ping during the night. So by the end of football season, I'm a zombie. But I think that's part of, and I'm sure you can appreciate this, but just being in the media, people who are in the media are on call all the time because the news cycle is 24/7. And so you have to be available pretty much most of the time. It makes it hard to disconnect. The people who have more success tend to be the people who are available.
Yeah. So that's one thing I had going on when I was in radio is I needed to be, and it kind of takes hold of you and doesn't let you go. And I imagine this is very similar if you're like maybe a private practice PT business owner. It's 24/7. You're always thinking of what you need to do next or what's coming or waiting for that phone call. TV, radio, injury analysis, that's 24/7. Something can happen at any hour of the day. And if you want to have that scoop, you want to have that breaking news, you want to have the lead, you kind of got to jump on it. You can't really wait.
Well, sometimes, as you may know, when we're recording this, the Warriors are playing in the NBA Finals. Of course, I'm a Bay Area sports fan, so I'm a Warriors fan. And I remember watching the night that Steph Curry got hurt. And I was like sitting there going, oh, here we go. Within like 20 minutes, I had a call from the news desk. desk, and they're like, did you see that? Of course I did, because that's my
show. Yeah, you're on top of it.
Right before we talked, I looked up because I got an alert. You know, we have these alerts at ESPN, so they alert you.
Oh, I get them.
Yes, well, very good. We're happy that you do. Mm-hmm. It's important. I'm glad you're keeping us all employed.
Sometimes we get them while we're in class in PT school. Maybe, but not. I, of course, turn my phone off because I'm studying.
So I have Do Not Disturb.
Right.
So that no one knows you're getting them. Jameson Taillon was an amazing pitching prospect when he was drafted by the Pirates. Had to have Tommy John surgery pretty much out of the gate. So he never really got started. Then after that, he ended up having to have another surgery. Well, I interviewed him in spring training when he was making the comeback from the Tommy John before the, I think he had a core muscle injury that was his secondary thing. But in any event, so he just now, Pittsburgh Pirates, you know, they had brought him up. Finally, he was ready to make his debut. They had somebody else go on the DL. He was debuting tonight, had a no-hitter through six.
Wow.
So I turned on the TV because I wanted to see this kid. I'm rooting for him.
He's coming back from injury.
Coming back from two injury, you wanted to see how he's doing. Unfortunately, and probably fortunately for our interview, because then I don't have the TV on, which is what you were he gave up a hit in the seventh, but pretty good for your debut.
I will say this about TV announcers sometimes. Sometimes when they use the words no-no too early in the game, it throws the jinx and it throws the kibosh on the no-no.
You believe in that? Look, as somebody who's been labeled with a curse, I'm not a fan of curses, so...
All I know is when I played 5 whole minutes in high school, when you have the no-no going or something's going on, nobody mentions it. Nobody talks to the pitcher. Don't look at him. Don't go anywhere
alone,
near him.
Nobody talks to him. But yeah, so I just jumped in late. But I always like to see, you know, when I follow these guys who have major injuries, I like to see them come back. So I will often check it out to see, you know, how do they look in their comeback? What's going on? It's very tough, you know, to have watching sports be a part of the job requirement.
Well, I imagine that you're not working with this particular athlete, but we mentioned in your intro that you work with complex athletic cases, you know, performers. So you looking into all the injuries about these young athletes and what they have to deal with, and you are essentially bridging the gap between John Q. Public watching on the couch, knowing he's got some running back on his team, and all of a sudden he's got an injury, and you come in there and you explain what it is. Now, you get pretty intimate, you know? I mean, you're a PT at heart, and now you're explaining this, you know, clearly and succinctly to the ESPN world. I imagine you kind of get attached a little bit. They become someone you're kind of rooting for.
It's funny, because people would ask me if I rooted for injuries. And I thought, well, that's a terrible thing, you know, because they're saying that's how you keep your job security. But the fact of the matter is, there's going to be injuries in sports. Of course, I don't root for them.
Well, no, I meant root for the player, not for the injury.
I know. I'm not saying you do, but I'm saying many people have said that.
Oh, no. Really?
And like, no, I'm a PT. Like, why? I don't want guys to get hurt. I don't need to root for that because it's going to happen.
It's
just the nature of sport, right? It's hard because sometimes I have to give a more grim outlook. You know, everybody wants to be rah-rah about a guy coming off an injury, and sometimes you're giving just a very practical outlook of what you expect or don't expect given the fact that they've had an injury. So I don't like to be negative. You know, I'm always the PT in me. I like to be positive, but it is tough having to honestly say, hey, I don't think this guy's ready, or there's something that I don't like. I remember last year, Yu Darvish was coming off of injuries from the year before, had shoulder problems, back problems, neck problems. I was like, I don't like it. I don't like all of that he had coming into the season. We have these big summits before the season starts. And I went through all the reasons that whole complex set of issues did not make me comfortable about him going into the season. And in spring training, I think it was his first spring training game, he left to start with tricep stiffness, I think they called it, or tricep soreness. And next thing you know, he had Tommy John surgery. Mm-hmm. So you never root for that, but you know it's going to happen.
Yeah. In a room like that, in a summit like that, who's in the room? And are the people who are on air with you, I mean, I bet you just because that's the nature of their business, they're probably pretty injury knowledge savvy, you know, maybe not to the PT level, but they've got to understand the common injuries anyway, right?
It's interesting because players have, if there are players who are analysts, they have their perspective on injury, usually related to whatever it is that they went through. It's their personal experience. If a guy dealt with coming back from Tommy John, he has very, you know, his experience is sort of what he projects onto everybody else. That's the challenge for the analysts, is whatever they did. That's their experience, and things sometimes evolve, or as you know, patients all respond differently. Sometimes it depends on where they had the surgery done, what their rehab was like, what their past history was. So the analysts tend to see it from really from their perspective and sort of how they were managed and what they went through. But then you've got other people who know history of playing the game, writers, reporters, who are familiar with covering it, so they know what they've seen from covering it. I think what I provide is sort of the context and the detail that people want to understand just to get a better appreciation from the medical side of what are they really dealing with. The thing everybody wants to ask you is how long is it going to take for a guy to come back? Because at the end of the day, that's all they really care about, you know?
I mean, my dad's been watching baseball longer than I've been alive, and a lot of times he'll update me on some players and be like, yeah, that guy's rotor cup, man, no good. Rotor cup's no good. I'm like, Dad, well, you know, never mind.
Or he has a strained trapeze.
Yeah. Trapeze is no good. So walk me through it. I watched online, did some background on you, and saw you giving a talk to your old high school, the Snails, in McLean, Virginia. Saw that. But walk me through the story of how you go from French literature to PT to PT on ESPN. I mean, that's a roundabout story, and I love roundabout meandering stories like that. I dig those.
Yeah, well, you have your own story like that, right?
So we'll keep drinking. I'll tell that one eventually, but yours is cool. I'm interested.
Well, it's funny because I remember when I was majoring in French literature, people used to ask me or ask my parents, because they thought my parents were certainly wasting their money on my education because I was majoring in French literature. And the question was always, well, what are you going to do with that? Or they would say to my parents, what is she going to do with that? And I love my mom's answer because she would get a little defensive. Anything she wants. Which, you know, it really depends how you view education. We could get very philosophical, but I'm of the opinion, there's actually a book I'm reading right now, I digress, but Fareed Zakaria, talking about in defense of liberal education. And the whole idea is that you don't train for a vocation necessarily when you go to college. Maybe it's about learning how to think critically, how to write. I just reread this one page of that book because it was like close to my heart about the value of writing. And anyone who is a student of mine when I was teaching can tell you, usually with a complaint attached to it, that I was always big hammering on writing. I had to write a thesis as part of being a lit major, and all the writing that I did in college is what prepared me to be able to write in my current job. So I think writing is an important skill. I knew I wanted to go into medicine of some kind, so I figured, well, I'll be doing science for the rest of my life, so I might as well focus for my major on something that's really more of interest to me, that's just going to get me to think and challenge me in a different way. So I was pre-med, and I worked in the training room as part of my work study job, but I was also a French lit major, and I actually wrote my thesis on this 18th century author, but related to medicine at the time. So
how did you relate those two things? I mean, just you can do it real quick.
Because this author was writing about military injuries and post-traumatic stress disorder back in those days.
Wow.
And to me, that was fascinating that he was sort of ahead of his time in incorporating medicine into what he was writing about, which was popular literature. That was fascinating to me. And I just happened to think that the French literature was a lot sexier and a lot racier and a lot more politically out there than the American literature at the time. So that's why I chose to major in that.
So you went racy, you went edgy. I like it.
You know, I had to stay interested. I was in college.
Yeah. How do you go from there to PT? You know, it's medicine. How do you pick PT?
Because I worked in the training room. You know, it wasn't like you see these big student training programs, especially if you go, you know, to a big sports school. At Princeton, we had a very small training room group, and there were only a few of us that worked in it. So I got so much mentoring there because we were really hands-on. And at that time, athletic training didn't really have a formal curriculum. It was hours-based. And so everything was learned on the job. You learned how to tape. So I actually covered teams. Sometimes on my own, I traveled with teams. I covered practices. So I was doing all of that. And the environment in the training room was all PTs and athletic trainers. And I really liked what the PTs did. You know, they were doing more of the detailed evaluations. And the more I did that and spent the time and saw the relationship that all of the rehab staff developed with the patients who were the student athletes. To me, I saw how much time they spent with them versus the orthopedic surgeons. And I was like, that's what I want to do.
Yeah.
Because I really like the relationship aspect of it. And that's what pushed me to PT. So I needed to take a year and do all the PT requirements. And I worked in a PT clinic and actually was where the San Francisco Giants and 49ers went for some of their rehab. So I was really exposed to working with athletes. And we got to do a lot. You know, back then you could do a lot of things.
Yeah.
So that was all prep for me. And then I went to PT school and I always had the interest in sports medicine. It just got stronger as I went through school.
So now you graduate, you're a PT, you're practicing, you're focusing on orthopedics. You get a certification in orthopedic manual therapy. You go on to work for Kaiser.
Yeah, the manual therapy. I had a very good job at it. It's fascinating. I used to tell people, if you can get a job, you know, you're a new grad. So I was always pushing new grads to try and get a job where there was mentoring on the job right away. And at that time, it's hard to find anymore, just economy structure the way that it is. But at Kaiser at the time, when you went in as a new grad, they didn't take too many. But if they did, they really invested in you. You had 3 months of teaching where basically one day a week you went to class and the classes were all day long and they were taught by people who taught in the fellowship program. So we were getting manual therapy instruction one day a week and I was paid like I was a work day because it was that important to them. And then I had a mentor in the clinic so I could pick patients out that I wanted them to see with me. We did manual therapy sessions, you know, training sessions. You could block out time to do practicing manual. So I got that as a brand new grad.
Wow, that's so big.
It's huge. And it accelerated my interest in manual therapy, my skill set, I think, just in terms of evaluating patients, all because I was there. And I had fellows from the Kaiser Hayward program who were at San Francisco. It was a teaching site for the program. So I was around them and I was like a sponge, always, you know, looking at what they were doing. So that was really my focus. And I ended up going to Kansas City because one of my former professors became the chair of the program there. And there was an opportunity for me to go and do some teaching. And that was a big push. I really wanted to. For a number of reasons, I decided to take that after being 2 years at my job. When I went out to KU, I ended up having an opportunity to work in the sports medicine clinic, do some teaching in the PT program, and then that just sort of evolved over the next 5 years. I did that. Went back to California because I decided I need to move back to the West Coast. Ended up working as a clinical specialist. By that time, I'd gone through the manual therapy certification, and I kind of had a leg in two different programs. I went through the Ole Grimsby program, but the Kaiser Hayward program, which I'd already had a relationship with, did a long-term course out in Kansas City. And one of the graduates who brought the long-term teaching out there was somebody I had known from Kaiser in San Francisco when she did the fellowship. And so I ended up helping teach in the long-term course. And when I moved back to California, they asked me to come teach in the fellowship. So that was kind of how I kept the teaching thread. And I also taught at Samuel Merritt and I taught a sports medicine elective because at the time, now I developed this whole sports experience because I worked with all the D1 athletes at KU. And so I worked with football and basketball at KU, which is next to Holiness out there. So if they had difficult cases, those were the ones that kind of got reserved for me. So I would go down and see them and set them up. And then in the off season, the athletes who I was following, especially if it was after surgery or something like that, they'd come up to Kansas City and rehab up there.
You couldn't plot that journey out if you tried for a thousand years on a map.
I think that's, you know, one of the key things that you take your opportunities where you can get them because you never know exactly what's going to come your way. And so people will say, wow, you're really lucky. And I was incredibly fortunate in all these things that sort of happened. But I also think if you're prepared and you're willing to sort of step off a cliff a little bit, and take some chances.
That's what they say. Luck favors the prepared. I mean, a lot of times, you know, people will be very, very humble and they'll say, you know, I just got lucky. But I mean, I almost want to just throw luck out of the equation and say, I mean, luck's not really in it. You hustled, you knew what you wanted, and you kept working and you did a lot. So, I mean, I'm going to go ahead and say it's not luck. You kept moving. You kept your feet moving.
There were a few things. There were the opportunities that presented themselves. And the other thing that happened when I was in Kansas City was that's when I started really doing some of the performing arts work. The Alvin Ailey Dance Theater, which is based in New York, has like a second home in Kansas City. And so it's a long story, but we developed a relationship with them And so when they would come to Kansas City, we would provide the PT services. And it became, I would basically bring other good orthopedic manual therapists to the theater and treat them there. And so it became that whenever there was traveling, like a Broadway show coming through Riverdance, they would call me to do PT. And so I would go to the theater and do it. So I, when I moved back to California, I kept that up and handled the shows that came through different theaters.
You were working on Michael Flatley, River Dancers?
Yeah.
Wow, that's cool.
But because, you know what's great about that? I was telling this story to somebody today. We were talking about how, why PTs are so, why there's such a spot for PTs working with performing artists like this. And I would treat, you know, not just people who are on the stage, but the orchestra. You think about it, they're doing these things over and over and over with shows. They have to perform all the time, a lot in the theater. You know, for some folks, you don't perform, you're not getting paid.
Right.
And that's why dancers, you know, you think of all the issues that they're confronted with. So they have to be able to go on stage, and they need people who can help them quickly figure out solutions. Treat them is one thing. You're obviously trying to help resolve whatever the issue is, but also help them manage or work around it. So sometimes I would get to see a show before it opened to the public on that tour, because we would come when they did like the previews, when the critics came. And if there was an issue that came up with a performer, I could watch it in the show where we needed to make an adjustment. This conversation today was about the producers, you know, very well-known Broadway musical.
Yeah, and I saw that one.
When they came, we covered that when they came on tour in San Francisco and San Jose, and at one point had to modify the choreography because somebody had like a thoracic, I don't know if they had like a little fracture, they had an injury, and there was something where they had to lift, do a lift. And I worked with them to modify the choreography so that it wouldn't bother the actor who was dealing with that at the time, and they could still get through the scene. And it was like a, you know, song and dance number, and we just re-choreographed that one segment so they could do it without provoking the symptoms and things like that. That's what a PT can do.
Yeah, movement experts right on the scene. Johnny on the spot.
And so there's a whole, you know, now there's a performing arts section that was really just getting off the ground when I was practicing then, but I was very, you know, pretty involved in that for a while. To me, I mean, that's why it says in my bio that I treat a lot of performing artists, because there was a whole segment of my population that I didn't. So I ended up treating a lot of musicians, you know, dancers, what have you. So that was a side piece. We never really got to why I came to ESPN.
But well, that's where we're going next. So there's your PT journey. How do you get the first call? You talked about this a little bit in your address to the students of your former high school, the home of the snails, which I got to say is one of the best mascots ever. How'd you get the call? Where'd that come from?
So I was a big fantasy football player, was introduced to it. There are a lot of people who are playing it. In fact, one of my coworkers who's really into it, and I was like, what is this fantasy football? Like, it just sounded stupid. And then when I heard, you know, it was something competitive, so I liked it. I was a huge football fan. So then when I found out it's basically you're drafting these players that you'd be watching anyway, you're going off projections that you make about how they're going to do during the course of the year. And you get points, you know, every time they run 10 yards or receive for 10 yards, score touchdown, you know, you get points. And I thought, well, I can do this, you know? And so I got invited into this co-ed league, very competitive. It was great because it was very co-ed. You know, I think it was probably 60% guys, 40% women, which if you look at a lot of fantasy leagues,
that's pretty good.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
And the women were super competitive, you know, really into it. I realized that people were asking me for advice all the time about, well, when's this player, what do you think, you know, so-and-so has this injury. But at the time, and still, you couldn't get much information off NFL injury reports. And keep in mind, this was, you know, again, before everything was on the internet all the time, there wasn't really a 24-hour news cycle. If a guy got hurt, he just sort of got hurt, and you didn't hear about him until he was ready to play again. So if you had an inclination what the injury was, you could project about how long he might be out. Or what I thought was equally important was what you could expect when he returned. Was he going to be compromised? If he had an MCL sprain, was he going to make it harder? Knowing that these guys come back before they're 100%, you know, if it's somebody who really depends on lateral cutting, then I'm not going to be as inclined to put him in my lineup right away out of the gate or something, you know, whatever.
It's kind of like knowing the value of a stock when it comes back. Is this guy going to be worth as much that I paid for him on draft day?
Right. And I think appreciating how the injuries could impact players. But even though I was using that information for my own, setting my lineups and what have you, when I had other people starting to ask me about it, I was like, this information is useful. And if they want it, then other people must right. want it. And that combined with the fact that I watch a lot of sports and I would get frustrated when an injury would happen and there'd be a lot of speculation by the announcer about what happened or what it was. And, you know, back then, nobody said ACL. Now people, they tear their ACL, every announcer references it because it's so much in the common vernacular right. that people are comfortable with it. But back then, nobody said it. They didn't know what it was. The silliness of what they would say. And I really didn't fault the reporters because it's not like they knew or had a background. But I thought, you know, this is somewhere where a PT could be really useful because they could explain it. And this was not long after, you know, it's interesting, the OJ Made in America documentary is on, running on ESPN right now, but that was the time of the OJ case. And after OJ, legal analysts became, it became this whole field. You could be a legal analyst, be on TV. Really, court TV came out of the OJ trial.
Right.
So you started seeing all these attorneys, and my analogy was, look, they're attorneys who have experience, but they're not directly connected to that case, but they can go on TV and they can present analysis based on understanding law and translate it for the public. And why couldn't you do the same thing in medicine? That was my thought.
So how did that thought become a pitch?
Because it just so happened that another friend of mine who played in this same co-ed league had an engineer, but had a side business with his brother-in-law making fantasy draft boards. You know, remember the old fantasy football draft boards
yeah.
where you put the stickers
yep.
up? They had the commercial about, you know, with the commercials, they would show the guys with the stickers. So he was going to this conference called, you know, it's the Fantasy Sports Trade Association meeting. And he said, you should come because this is where people who are getting, you know, it was a small association, a lot of mom and pop businesses around fantasy sports, but a couple of the companies who were getting into it bigger, Yahoo was there. CBS Sportsline was the big, they were kind of the biggest for the fantasy sports at the time. And ESPN was starting to get into it. And Fox Sports, so he said, you should come and start pitching your idea. So I did, and they would have meetings twice a year. And that's how I got talking to people about it. And I found that, first of all, I was one of about maybe two women there. Everybody else, it was all dudes.
And it's like Comic-Con. It's like Comic-Con for sports.
It is, only much smaller at the time. But I have to say, you recognize that as an opportunity as well, because you're thinking, well, you always want things to stand out. If you're in an audience where every single person pitching something's a guy, and then you've got a woman who plays fantasy football, knows enough about it. At that point, I'd played for a few years, knows enough about it to be able to talk about it with the guys who are talking about it. They're going to take you more seriously. And I got a lot of support for the concept, but people were saying to me, you know, nobody's going to pay you for that. Like, essentially saying you can't monetize it.
Right.
And I decided, but if the information was valuable enough, sure it could. I wasn't dissuaded by that. I just needed somebody to let me kind of get my foot in the door. And so that's where the KFFL thing came in. They gave me my first opportunity to write something. It literally was inside somebody else's column. It was like a little sidebar piece. But I remember the first time they posted something of mine, and this was when, again, I feel like I sound so old saying that, but the internet, it wasn't that big. Like, blogging was not a thing. Nobody knew what a blog was. It was hard to define at that point. You'd go on the internet, and you'd be surprised if you saw. So I was fascinated that my stuff was appearing on the internet. But I remember the Buffalo Bills website took something of mine and reposted it. And I was like, whoa, this is real. There's a football team who thinks what I'm saying is worthwhile. So there's definitely something here. The KFFL piece was small, but the RotoWire guys saw it. Then they said, we'd like you to write for us and we can make it bigger. And they had the magazine, you know, the fantasy football magazine. So they wanted me to write something for them. And they put it in the, you know, when I saw it come out and it was in, like, you could walk into Barnes & Noble and there was a magazine and my name was on the cover, you know, it's having the injury article.
How cool is that?
It was very cool.
I mean, yeah.
You know, you're going from, and that was within a year of me
wow.
starting. And then they partnered with Sirius XM got a radio show. So I started doing radio with them. And I couldn't believe it. But I mean, this stuff just took off. And that's how ESPN at the time was starting to build out fantasy. They were trying to make a big push. And Matthew Berry had just gone to work for them. They basically gave him license to expand the department, if you will, in terms of who he brought in as analysts for fantasy. One thing led to another, and he ended up getting in touch with me, and they liked my writing, and they wanted me to come out for an audition, and I did. And after I did, I had never done television other than, you know, a couple of TV commercials as a kid that didn't really count. But I had no idea what I was doing. No one really prepped me. They had these remote cameras. I nearly got taken out by one of them when I was on the set. And I thought I was awful. And I was pretty sure that that was going to be my one and only trip to ESPN. But I had a meeting with executive who was in charge of content. And he was a big proponent of fantasy, really helping get the rest of the company on board. And a very smart guy who had a very interesting career. Just recently retired, but he'd been in the music industry. I mean, always in writing, but worked for Rolling Stone. So he was always looking at things from a really...
The next. What's coming next?
Yes. And been a longtime fantasy player. He and I met, and he loved the fact that I majored in French literature. And he loved the fact that I had written a lot and that I was a PT and I was a woman who played fantasy. So all of those things that we just spent forever going through, he was like, I love that because it's different and this is unique. He basically told Matthew, don't let her leave town without a job offer.
That's awesome.
So to my surprise, I got one.
Everything you just said, you know, you're a French literature major, you're a female who plays fantasy sports. I mean, you know, the guy who majored in athletics or played D1 sports, those guys are a dime a dozen. And you are the exception to the rule, the exception to the norm in that setting. And you knew something, like you said, you referred back to the court TV coming out of the OJ trial. You're an expert in something that unfortunately happens during this event a lot, and that's injury in football, and you just bring a perspective that nobody else had.
I guess.
That must be it, because you're still there.
Well, you know, it's funny, because I came in on a contract. It was like a 6-month contract, so I really had no idea. And I really didn't know what I would be doing. So when I showed up, and at that time I was commuting, so I would come out to Connecticut and I would go back to California and see patients and teach. So I was still teaching at Samuel Mayer. I don't really know how I survived that 6 months, but you do what you have to because I had a chance. And by the way, for all those PT students out there who are wondering about, or new grads thinking about money, I had to take about a 70% pay cut to do it. I definitely jumped off a cliff. No idea what I was doing, no training in television, huge pay cut because they were basically paying me just a small contract, experimental contract money. But what saved me was they covered my expenses for travel. I was still working a couple of days in the clinic and teaching because I had to get by. But I went way back in terms of finances. But obviously it was ESPN and I had an opportunity, so I took it. And what was great about it was that's when we started the podcast. So that's when the podcast got off the ground. Nobody knew what a podcast was then, you know?
Right. I mean, you were on the forefront of this thing nobody knew, which was fantasy sports. And then you were on the forefront of this thing, but who the hell knows what a podcast is? My dad doesn't know what a podcast is. I tried to get him to listen to it. He has no clue.
It's funny because people still ask, but obviously there are so many more podcasts now. At the time, we were one of the only ones doing podcasts. People were like, wait, is it radio?
Yeah.
Or, you know, what exactly are you doing? I didn't really know. We did podcast. That turned into, you know, we have this sort of loyal fan base following the podcast now. I was surprised as anyone to learn last year that we had over 250,000 downloads a day.
Wow.
That's a loyal following, but I know because even when I go to PT conferences, I meet students. What they tell me is they use the drop references from the podcast.
Yeah.
And that's, for those who do, they have no idea how much that means to me. And we're very proud of the fact that that has stuck around.
That's cool.
But we did podcast, we did a TV show that wasn't on TV. It was produced in the studio, but it was online, digitally. And we were kind of the experiment that no one in the company even really knew, like, what are they doing? But they let us go. The show, which is now fantasy football, it was always fantasy football now, but now it's on television. At the time, it was studio produced, but it ran online only. And that was the first full-length studio show. that ran online for ESPN. And that was a very new concept as well. And we ended up winning an Emmy for it.
Wow.
And so that got everyone's attention. They were like, well, it can't be that bad. And so they let us continue it.
Well, now, I haven't had many people on this show or people I interviewed in my radio career, and I interviewed some rock stars in the 12 years that I was in radio, and I didn't have many people on the show who said, you know, I'm really, really glad I took the safe route and just did the same thing everybody else did. I mean, I had nobody on this podcast or my 12 years of radio who said that, and you kept doing it. You kept doing this weird thing, fantasy football. Yeah, I'm going to go this direction. Podcast? Sure, why not? I'm going to take a pay cut for it. You know, maybe you had your parents over your shoulder going, you went to Princeton. You don't take a pay cut for anybody, but you said, you know what? I want to do this, and you did, and that's the point.
Yeah, they were actually, they've been super supportive throughout my, they weren't even sure when I went into PT, they didn't really know what PT was. I mean, they hadn't experienced going through physical therapy, so I had to educate them on that, but they've always been like, well, if it's what you love to do. All they cared about was that I was doing something that I was passionate about, and that was pretty apparent. And this has been like the icing on the cake. I mean, they were, my whole family is sports fans, so when I got the job at ESPN, I think they understood why I wanted to do it.
Yeah, they got it. You know, it might be hard to explain. Again, I've tried to tell my dad what a podcast is, and he says, good job, son, but I have no idea what that is. But, I mean, if your family's sports fans, they get it, and it's good to see when people stick behind you like that.
Yeah, and it's funny now because my dad explains to everyone about fantasy football, and I think their experience has been, they've been surprised to see how huge fantasy football has become. It wasn't, you know, now, even though not everybody plays it, a lot of people know what it is, or they're at least familiar with it, and that it's really big when the fall rolls around. And obviously the NFL knows about it, and you know, it's just turned into this huge marketing thing. But I will say, fantasy football was the entree, but it opened the door to being able to do many more things with the injury analysis on television or on any of our other platforms. And I remember when I first started doing other TV spots, I would do things for, when ESPN News, we used to do many more news updates on that channel. So I would do a regular bit for them. And people would ask me, so do you just do football, or can you talk about, like, if a baseball player's injured, can you talk about that? Which was so funny to me, because I'm like, I'm a PT. It really doesn't matter. Like, we can take the injury and apply it. But if you look at the structure of our network, you have analysts who specialize in a particular sport, usually because they played it.
Right.
So, you know, if somebody's coming in as an analyst, and that's technically what I was, they would think that you're assigned to a sport. And it took a while to help everyone understand that I just needed to understand what the demands of the sport were, or and what the situation was, and then we would find a way to talk about it. And it turned into, for example, the NASCAR people came to me when we used to have the NASCAR show and said, can you talk about, we had Jeff Gordon when he had back problems and how is he going to be able to drive? And we had Denny Hamlin when he tore his ACL, he was going to drive, he was going to race 9 days later. And they wanted to know, how can he do that? Well, I didn't know much about NASCAR. I just knew they drove in a circle to the left, you know, over and over. But it was so cool. I sat with the NASCAR people. We studied the track. So I learned about the braking at this particular track, like what the demands were going to be. The whole thing of getting in and out of the car through the window, which to me, with that was the biggest issue. 9 days after ACL, he has a crash and he has to get out. How hard is that going to be?
Yeah.
So you basically got to apply being a PT to whatever the sport was. So I've had some very cool things, you know, very cool experiences talking about things I had to learn about to be able to do it, and just applied sort of the PT knowledge to the sports situation.
Yeah, that's exactly what PT is. You know, you're handed a patient. 5 minutes from now, you're going to be seeing a guy who drives a truck or somebody who works in an assembly line, and you've got to figure out what their daily demands are. And even if you've never seen someone get in a NASCAR, and okay, how's Jeff Gordon going to get in? Well, I don't know. Show me how you do it. That's what PTs do. You know, if we are what the APT says we are, and I like to think we are, movement experts positioned in a position where you are in terms of sport, you should be able to figure out, you know, hey, we've got a highlight player who's got a little bit of a shoulder injury. What do you think? What do you think his chance are playing some highlight tomorrow? Watch a couple of films on highlight and you can figure it out, right?
That's basically been my approach. And what's great is I have all these analysts around me. So It's been awesome to hang out with, you know, in the green room. I would sit in the green room and watch baseball games when I was doing a lot of Baseball Tonight. I'd sit there and watch games with former players. And we'd get in these conversations about what we were seeing and what we thought and talking about the injury histories. And I learned so much from them in terms of what their perspective was. And they learned things from me. And then you start cross-pollination is amazing. So I've had an opportunity to learn a ton from all these people who played the sport, or coaches, managers, who, and you know, even like GMs when they're talking about what they look for when they're drafting a player and how much injury history comes into play. I do work with the NFL draft. I've learned a ton from all the GMs about what they're thinking about when they go into the draft or what they're looking for in the combine. And so the conversations, that's sort of how my role has evolved from not even just talking about the sport itself, but in terms of how injuries or injury history or injury projection affects from a management perspective.
I'd love to hear somebody from 10 or 15 years ago when fantasy sports was really starting to take off and injury insight into to fantasy football and any other fantasy sport was coming into play. Have a person from that era come right now and say, I don't think injury information is that big a deal. And you know every team has got a PT and a staff of docs in the ear in terms of recovery. Should I make this trade? Should we make this draft? And it can set your franchise up in a good or bad way if you pick the wrong player and that guy's got a chronic injury and isn't what you think he's going to be on face value.
Exactly. And we're starting to see that people have lost jobs because of that. I mean, it's now become this really huge thing. And I do feel badly because, look, you can't it's not a perfect science.
Right.
You can't predict all these, especially when you get into contact and collision sports where, you know, some of it is just that it's physics of what happens in that moment. There's nothing you can do. But there certainly are, there are some things that factor into risk, and they're not always accurate either. But I think it's interesting to see how far this concept of injury analytics and sports science has come, and still a long ways to go because there's a lot of speculation around it. But teams are investing in it. They're trying to learn more because they understand that there's a lot of money going down the drain if guys are injured and not playing, and they have to, there's not only the cost of the player who's not playing, but replacement cost for whoever they're plugging in.
Right. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We figured out where Stefania was and where she is. I want to go into the future, and can we field a couple of questions from the Twitter sphere for Stefania?
Are you asking me?
Yeah, would you mind taking a couple of questions from Twitter?
Oh, no. Go ahead.
All right, we'll take a quick break. Back in 60 seconds of the PT Pinecast. Don't move.
Working at his orbicularis oris until failure. Jimmy McKay on the PT Pinecast.
PT Final Exam is an awesome resource for students preparing to take the National Physical Therapy Exam. 6-week online review courses with live webinars, personal attention from instructors through email, phone, or Skype, and practice tests. Choose from their Mastermind Study Group or the NPTE Home Study Bundle. Visit them online at ptfinalexam.com/pintcast. That's ptfinalexam.com/pintcast.
The PT Pinecast proudly supports the Wounded Warrior Project. Since 2003, the Wounded Warrior Project has been raising funds and awareness for the needs of injured service members, helping injured servicemen and women with aid and assistance, and to provide unique direct programs and services to meet their needs. Their continuing goal is to foster the most successful, well-adjusted generation of wounded service members in our nation's history. To find out how you can help the Wounded Warrior Project, visit them online at woundedwarriorproject.org. We talk PT, drink beer, and record it. This is the PT Pinecast.
All right, we're back on the PT Pinecast with Stefania Bell. You can check her on Twitter at Stefania_ESPN. I want to know, were you the mascot or were you on a team at Madeira High School? Were you the snail or were you on a sports team there?
I was not on a sports team. Well, boy, you're going, I don't even want to go here. So we didn't have a track team.
Right.
I was a runner. We didn't have, it sounds so lame, Mike, we didn't have a track, but we didn't. Like, their sports facilities are really awesome now. We did not have a track team. All-girls school, smaller school. And then I played squash, because I grew up playing squash with my dad, which is weird for a Californian at the time.
Yeah, that's an East Coast sport.
Yeah, the East Coast sport, but my dad worked at Stanford, and they had squash and racquetball courts, and so he picked up squash from some of the folks who worked at Stanford, so I started playing. So we had, like, a club squash group that played some, but we didn't. It wasn't enough to field a team. So those were, Go ahead, mock.
No, I'm not mock. I just love the fact I like weird mascots. I went back to where
I could never really get behind the snail because I felt like
it's tough
to be that.
It's tough.
But the motto. See, you have to. You get the snail without the motto. You know, but the motto is make haste slowly. It's festina lente. It comes from Latin. It's deep thought. Like, process that, make haste slowly. That's where the snail comes from.
Well, I like it. Look, I can't say much. I went to St. Bonaventure University. We had to change our mascot a couple years ago due to the NCAA, and now we're just the Bonnies. So I know what a snail is, but many people don't know what a Bonnie is. So
that's even weirder. I'd be the first to admit I have no idea.
A Bonnie is, just that's what they used to just call people who went to St. Bonaventure when they made the NCAA made that kind of proclamation where anybody with an American Indian mascot had to change it. That's when the St. Bonaventure Brown Indians became the St. Bonaventure Bonnies.
That needed to be changed.
Yeah. So now we're just the Bonnies.
Okay. So do you have, what do you draw for a Bonnie? Like,
that's the thing. They adopted a wolf because of some biblical stories with St. Francis and St. Bonaventure. So we're the St. Bonaventure Bonnies, but our mascot is a wolf.
All right. I'm going to say that's like Cornell. We used to make fun of them because they're big, the big,
big
red.
Big red, yeah.
I don't even want to know what that is supposed to be.
Not sure.
But they go with a bear.
Well, I do like the fact that the cheer used from Madeira High School, the Home of Snails, is go, go, escargots. I mean, that's witty. That's funny.
Well, I guess you think so when you're in that small private school, but I'm not sure how funny that really. And hey, look, there were weird mascots. Like, UC Santa Barbara has the Gauchos. I mean, I guess you know what that is, but I still will take a snail over University of Richmond spiders. Probably going to get some very Richmond folks, but I couldn't wear anything that had a spider on it.
Creepy. Yeah, they're in the A-10 too. All right, so here's some questions from Twitter. I know you're very active on Twitter, getting, as you mentioned before, 250,000 podcast downloads per day. That's tough to wrap my mind around. I think we just passed 140,000 in a couple of months, but that's a lot.
I'm impressed with your traffic. Everybody knows your podcast who's NPT, and that's your brand. You know how to brand. That's the first step.
I'm just going to take a moment. I'm going to soak this in. It's Fanny Bell. She said she knows my podcast. I'm just going to blush a little bit. All right. So we threw the word out on Twitter at PT Pinecast a few minutes ago, said we were talking to you, and we got a few questions. One brought up the BFR story. We had actually communicated a couple months ago about the Johnny Owens podcast we did, and this was before I aired the podcast. You said, and I'm roughly quoting you, that this blood flow restriction training is going to be one of the biggest leaps in science, recovery, sports in the next 5 to 10 years. We got to pay attention to it. And then you did a piece on it on ESPN. It was really cool. Johnny Owens in it, Dwight Howard. So they wanted to know, how'd you find that out? Or, Johnny Owens kind of highlighted on our show that it's been around for a while, but it's starting to see a resurgence. What grabbed you about it that made you want to tell that story?
Well, first of all, I like that you gave Johnny Owens like the first props before Dwight Howard. Like,
yeah, he's the man. He's a PT.
Podcast.
Yeah.
I found out about it because we were doing Veterans Day coverage from the Center for the Intrepid, Brooke Army Medical Center. And one of our senior coordinating producers had come to me after they'd been scouting the location and said, hey, have you ever seen people do this exercise where they put like this tourniquet on and then they inflate it? And then I was sure that he had it wrong, like that he didn't really know what he saw. And he's like, I go, who's doing it? I said, I think it was the PT. And I thought, if there's anything I know from my manual therapy days, it's that the folks who are in the military were super well-grounded in research and highly skilled. So if he had told me that about a random clinic, I might have been a little more suspicious. But the fact that it was taking place there at the CFI, I thought there's probably something to this and I need to find out more about it. And he asked me to look into it. And I reached out to Johnny. And I think the first time we talked for over an hour. I couldn't get enough. I was fascinated by what he had told me they were doing down there. He's clearly very bright. You know that from having him on the podcast. And he's super into the science. I mean, he is as competent in understanding and appreciating and being able to work with that basic science as anyone. And he's got a very scientific mind. You know, he's very good at this whole scientific inquiry. People want to learn more about, obviously they should listen to your podcast with him. But that's what got me interested. I went down to San Antonio, spent a day down there, actually did the BFR on myself. So I experienced it, and all you got to do is try it. And yeah, it's hard to explain, but you immediately feel like, whoa, this is crazy. I don't feel like I'm doing that much, but I'm working so hard. And that was really my introduction to it. At the time, they were just doing it in the military. They really hadn't released it to the public. When we did the Sports Center, we explained what they were doing. That was the first time anybody had really seen it.
That's a scoop right there. That's big.
There were people who were dabbling in this, and there were other people who were using it, but not with the same, what's the word I'm looking for? I mean, they were going about it in a very scientific way at the CFI. It wasn't just random. I brought in the president of the NFL Team Physician Society, Matt Matava, who's also the St. Louis Rams doc, and said I just wanted him to sit in on a conference call with the orthopedic surgeons at the, who basically ran the Center for the Intrepid, and Johnny, to hear about it, because I wanted someone who was taking care of those athletes who, Dr. Matava has an excellent reputation, longstanding orthopedic surgeon, and he's at WashU in St. Louis. So I wanted him to hear what they were doing and see what he thought about potential application. And within the time that we finished the whole conference call, he was thinking about inviting Johnny to present that information with the data that they had so far at the next NFL Combine. So that told me, hey, there's really some potential here. Then what happened, basically as that information started to become shared, Walt Lowe with the Texans, he's in the piece that I did. He's also the team physician for the Houston Rockets. When Jadeveon Clowney had the microfracture, he had seen our piece, was interested in the possibilities of using it there. I connected him with Johnny. The Texans were really the first team to use it on any of their players. And they were the first in the NFL and first of the big four sports, shall we say. After Jadeveon Clowney had such good results, I mean, people think of him, he has some injuries, but he'd never had any problems with that knee afterwards. One of the things I heard was that when he got rid of the crutches, he walked he had such good maintenance of his quad that they were blown away, because this is one of the problems with these big surgeries is athletes, they never get their strength back.
Right.
They never get it back 100%. It's impossible. It's really tough. They lose their quad. And there's some people, their careers are never the same.
Yeah.
That was a big deal. And after that happened, I knew we had to do a piece with a player. We just had to find the right time and the right window. And when I heard, again, because of Clowney's success, I think when Dwight Howard had knee problems, Dr. Lowe said, we need to bring this to the Rockets. That's what happened. We had a window. That's how we did the piece.
An interesting quote that Johnny had said is a lot of times he's seen that they use BFR on the affected lower extremity, and then they actually need to use it on the non-affected side, because the affected area is actually become stronger with the BFR.
It's crazy. And I think what's fascinating now is beyond. So we saw this has potential for the injured athlete coming back. Like we're going to, minimize atrophy, really get their strength back. But what's crazy is beyond that now we're seeing it as a maintenance tool. Some of the teams, when you look at the long season, some of the injury, the breakdown might be because of the length of the season, the fatigue. These guys are doing an incredible amount of strength training and conditioning coming into a season. Season goes on, they can't keep that up.
Right.
What if they could use BFR as a means of maintenance so that they're able to work at lower loads when the season becomes more demanding? Might that help prevent injuries down the line? So that's, you're kind of seeing that start to happen. In the science, there's documentation of aerobic benefits. You know, we think of all this anaerobic with the strengthening, but and Johnny can certainly explain the science much better than I can, but basically, your heart's having to work harder because you're getting less blood return. So you're seeing improvements in VO2 max for guys who are doing these very light protocols, if you will. For example, they call it the bike protocol. Put the tourniquet on, basically have them on a stationary bike for 10 minutes or very little resistance. And they're seeing a training benefit, which is crazy, right?
Big deal, yeah.
So when I was going around doing spring training rounds, talking with Lonnie Soloff at the Cleveland Indians, who's basically their director of medical services there, he said, you know, we get some pitchers come back, maybe they're not in the greatest shape when the season starts, putting them on the bike protocol and seeing a training effect. It's happening. So there's potential for this to have applications in cardiac rehab. Actually, there are some folks who are interested in studying that now. So you're seeing all these potential applications for it beyond just traditional strengthening.
Yeah, you heard it. You heard it here first. You called it. It's going to be something big in the next 5 to 10 years.
I think so. I think it's already just the number of teams when we did the report for OTL. At that time, we were saying more than 20 professional teams. Number is going to double in another year.
Wow.
You know?
That's big. That question out of Ryan Madry from MUSC. Another one, because you're all over Twitter, on Twitter at Stefania_ESPN. We had someone ask, what was the toughest feedback or criticism you got from an assessment you had done on ESPN, and how'd you handle it? Because, you know, with 250,000 downloads a day and a million Twitter followers and everything, I mean, I'm sure you got some huge fans and you got some people taking pot shots at you. So how do you deal with that?
Well, first of all, and I'm sure, you know, look, you have a background in radio, so mm-hmm. you can appreciate this. If you want to get into anything in the media, you better develop a lot of thicker layers.
Thick skin. Yeah. Bingo.
Because when you put yourself out there, there's always going to be people who don't like you.
Yeah.
And that's hard. You know, PTs are, I think, in general, we're nice people. We want to be liked. We're pleasers, you know. So it's not great. It never feels great, right? To have there be people who don't like you, but they're not going to like you for whatever reason. They're not going to like the way you look. They're not going to like the way your voice sounds on air. They're not going to like that gesture that you make, you know, whatever it is. If they have a reason not to like you, that's going to happen. So you have to be able to compartmentalize to some degree and toss some of that aside, or this is not that path for you.
Right.
For me, what became really important, knowing that, and I anticipated that, but you know what? I was a teacher
right.
in the PT program. We get feedback, you know, so I had already gotten accustomed to dealing with some of those things in terms of feedback and trying to sift out what were the constructive comments
And you know, your patients aren't going to always line up. I heard a great quote. You aren't always the best PT for your patient, but sometimes that patient isn't always the best fit for you either. Sometimes you just don't get along and you got to learn how to deal with that.
Exactly. Look, it's a metaphor for life. So there's that part. But for me, what was important was I want, and this is why I spend so much time. I mean, I think people are surprised sometimes. You go on the air, you're on for 90 seconds to 3 minutes, and I will do hours worth of prep for a very short hit because you're picking your words carefully. Not that it's scripted, but that you have your thoughts together.
Right, lined up, everything in a row.
Right. It's not like we're doing here on the podcast where clearly I am at a loss for words at times, and I'm not very well, you know, it's not like I'm prepped it. It's not scripted. But when you go on television, you have that narrow window. You want your thoughts to be clear and concise, and you have to know what it is that you want to leave people with. So for me, what became important, and I felt like, look, they're introducing me as a physical therapist. If I don't say things that are accurate and credible, I jeopardize what people think about PT. It's not really even just about me. It's about when people see a PT on air, because there aren't that many, I don't think. I mean, I don't think there's anyone else who does this.
No, absolutely not.
You have to think about what that perception is going to be, because that's going to be the takeaway. And so for me, it was very important that I stuck to whatever the best information available. So if it was about the injury, what the injury was reported to be, that we stuck with that, didn't speculate, that I emphasized we're speaking in generalities, you know, not specific to that player necessarily, that if you dissected what I said content-wise, it would be tough to critique that. That's kind of been where I've come from. And the reason I say all that to answer this question is because the criticisms then become relatively meaningless.
Right.
It's hard to pick out the worst criticism or the harshest criticism after I've done an assessment, because to be honest with you, they haven't really been about content. they've been about your looks,
right,
or all those things.
Things that are easily now dismissed.
And I'm not saying that there are times where you couldn't do something better. This is not about that. Cause I'm a very harsh critic on my own stuff. I do watch it. You look at it, you think, oh, sometimes, you know, you'll be on 3 or 4 different sports centers talking about the same thing. And you'll think, well, that segment, I would really like to tweak that because maybe the way that sounded didn't sound great. To answer that person's Twitter question, there isn't something where it comes down to content that has really stuck out for me. But I think it's because I go so far to try and protect that for the integrity of PT and what people can add as PT.
That's good. Well, that question was from Keith Foley. That's at Physio Foley. And this question's from me, and it's kind of in line with what you were just talking about. You are not on a local media level. You are not on a state media level. You're not on a national media level. On ESPN, you're on a worldwide, can't get bigger unless you start doing international space station stuff, which I'm pretty sure they get ESPN up there too. You're on that level. You're on that kind of a level as a PT, and you doing it well. I want to say thank you for doing it and putting that much thought into what you're saying and how you're saying it, because I know it matters and it resonates for the promotion. This is a different type of direction, a way to promote PT that isn't necessarily traditional. What are some other ways people can do that? Because I think that's a better way than putting up billboards or running TV spots or anything, is putting PTs where they should be, and they definitely should be on ESPN. How else can people do that? What are different ways we can get PTs involved?
You know, it's funny because I don't know that we could define all the ways. I think for me, this came about sort of as me following my passion, and that's for two things, you know, physical therapy and sports. And right. I just combined, and I have this very cool job that I have as a
very
result.
Cool job. But if you need a day off, you let me know.
Well, you've already got the media experience.
Yeah, let me know. I'll call.
Maybe I should be looking over my shoulder. You're going to come in and take my job away. I think what's more important is that people just, the box, that there is no box. You're coming out of school right now, so it's fresher for you. But I remember that I thought, okay, there are these certain things that I could do. I'll either work in this setting or in this setting or this setting, and I might teach and I might be a business owner. But I thought pretty traditionally. Before ESPN, even the thing like with the performing artists and doing backstage work at a theater and treating people, things that were dressing rooms and not PT and not having equipment and using your hands and having to do 10 or 15 minute treatments on people that you're just getting to know. I mean, that's different. Nobody's telling you in school, hey, you're going to potentially do this. A lot of times the promotion, like you ask about, comes through performing in those alternate settings and the word of mouth that goes with that. So if the other performing artists are saying, hey, this is really cool, we had really good PT, well, and they would remember, in this city, we had really good people taking care of us, then that leads other people to then say, hey, what are they doing here? We're going to ask for them when we come around. To me, by following what it is that you're passionate about and thinking, how can I integrate what I do as a PT to that, the opportunities are endless, and that's sort of how I found this. But a lot of people do ask me, how can they get involved in doing things that are media related that maybe aren't so intimidating as going on, you know, a national network? Because I wouldn't necessarily recommend starting.
Don't start there. It's very difficult to do it, and it might be a little intimidating. You're right. Yes,
it's very intimidating. I mean, I used to almost throw up before I would go on the air because I was so nervous. So that's improved. But I think by being a good representative of the profession, whether that's when interacting with people who are the other professional colleagues that you deal with that aren't necessarily just PTs, doing things in the community. And you guys have done a bunch of that. You know, students are great at this because they're always doing things that are community service based.
PT Day of Service. I don't know if you heard about that. PT Day of Service coming up October 17th. That's a big event.
Right. I mean, things of that nature. Because one of the things that really touched me when I first started doing this, I would go on the road, would be people saying, hey, I didn't know PTs knew about this, or I didn't know PTs did that stuff, or whatever it was giving a new face or
a new look.
A new look to people who thought, well, PTs, like, they're in hospitals for people who, well, some are, but PTs can also be here and here and here and here and can do all these kinds of things or have this knowledge. I think that was the other thing. People were surprised, like, oh, you know about that?
Right.
Well, yeah. PTs know about that. So I think in terms of what other things people can do, I wouldn't certainly put a limit on it, but I would ask people to think non-traditionally and just recognize that even when you're not out there advocating for PT specifically, whether it's advocacy like legislatively or advocacy in terms of promotion or branding, sometimes by just being the representative of the profession in a setting that's unique or different, that's the advertising right there.
That's the best way. Yeah, be a good representative of what PT is, and that's the best way you can promote PT. Well, I want to thank you for doing just that on a worldwide, international, intergalactic-wide stage and doing that on ESPN.
Well, thank you for that, but I would say I'm pretty, you know, I'm very fortunate to wake up every day and really love going to work. I used to say when I was younger, like, that's what I wanted. Right. I wanted to wake up in the morning and be really excited about going to work. And, you know, we all have days where maybe we don't feel like working, but I have always loved what I've done in PT. I've just kept it interesting because it's changed for me along the way. It evolved to what I'm doing now, but I couldn't be luckier than to be able to integrate the PT. And by the way, for the people who think like, oh, well, you're still not a PT, or do you mean? I use it every single day. I mean, it's really interesting to me that some people think like I'm distanced from PT because I don't really know how I could do my job if I didn't stay current. Am I manually treating patients? No, other than a little consulting here and there. But I like to say that I'm just in a different chapter of my professional career, and that hopefully the impact that I'm having is just as big, if not bigger, but maybe slightly different audience, and it's not one-on-one with patients
anymore. I agree. All right, just two more questions. Number one, I have the first pick in next year's fantasy football draft within my college buddies circle. Who do I pick? Who should I take?
Antonio Brown.
Okay, good. I'm going to lock that up. All right, every episode we do is a pint, and before we're done with pints, we have shots. So parting shots of wisdom as I'm about to graduate and go get that first job into PT. What's something I should keep in the forefront of my mind as I go out there into the real world?
That the first place you go may not be where you end up. I think people are so set on, I've got to find the perfect job. I've got to find the perfect job. It's got to meet all these needs. It's got to pay me this. It's got to be the population I want. It's got to be the hours I want. It's got to have this kind of promotional scale. It's got to have this kind of flexibility. Maybe not going to get everything you want in the first job, and that's okay.
Yeah.
You know, I think there's so many things that can happen, and jobs evolve and people evolve. And you may find sometimes the first job isn't something you particularly, it ends up not being what you thought it would be. But every step along the way is part of your path. There's no time wasted. I mean, people ask me, would I do things differently? Well, sure, I would have loved to have had your media background before I ended up in front of a microphone and television screen. But would I trade? No, because I had to learn on my feet, and it sort of forced the way, you know, my attention to my craft, if you will, once I got here, had to be super intense because it was something that was new. And none of the things I did along the way were wasted time. I think they're all part of what allowed me to do what it is that I do now. So that's what I would say for the most part, is not for people to not have expectations that it's going to be perfect at the first place.
I like that. Every step is part of your path, from somebody who has a pretty unique and interesting path to where she is right now in the field of PT. That's great advice. I appreciate that.
Oh, I don't think you need my advice, but you're welcome.
All right. Well, thank you very much for taking this time. I've been waiting a long time to talk to you. I'm glad you're in our profession and help there, and making sure I know who to pick each and every week on fantasy football.
Yes. Please watch our show. That's how we stay on the air.
Yes. Check her out on Twitter at Stefania_ESPN.
Thanks for having me. It's an honor.
Like what you hear? Leave us a review on iTunes. It's not like our moms can keep giving us 5 stars every day. Or can they? The PT Pinecast is intended for educational purposes only. No clinical decision-making should be based solely on one source. While care is taken to ensure accuracy, factual errors can be present. Our lawyers made us read that.